Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we've got our reactions from Heat Media Day, including how Spo thinks that this roster can get better, and it doesn't necessarily include trading for Jimmy Butler.
And if you want to contribute to our upcoming written Miami Heat season preview, you can do that by visiting patreon.com/lockedonheat and click on the link for the questionnaire. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
It's pretty simple. If they're described as good, let's make them great.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where we break down every news item, rumor, game, media day, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the Heat and the NBA for FanSided. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat and league at large for SB Nation and FanSided. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
David, you were at the Heat's media day on Monday. You made the trip down there, and there's, of course, a lot to take away. And there's some tensions maybe due to the Jimmy Butler trade talks, but the star of the day was Dwayne Wade, who talked a lot about what his final season in the NBA will be. And so we've got some audio from that. Let's play that really quick.
I was about 90-10 at that point. It was over. But, you know, that was the messages that kept coming back to me is that, you know, you're fortunate enough to be in this situation where you, you know, can control, you know, how it ends, you know, bearing any injuries. And I think, you know, even what Shaq said the other day, you know, listening to some of the greats that played this game and not having an opportunity to go through, you know, an opportunity like, you know, this, that make me appreciate even more, you know, that I have the ability to do it, you know, this way or my way, you know, in a sense. So I continue to say I'm going to be very uncomfortable with this whole thing. I'm going to be very uncomfortable with the farewell tour. It's not something that I wanted. I think people around me know I really, really, really didn't want this. So I just look at it and say this is me just saying goodbye.
So, David, what was sort of the vibe when it came to Dwayne Wade? Because there's going to be a balancing act in appreciating this final season while also trying to help this team win and develop, right?
Absolutely. And I think that was the overall sense that I got from Dwayne himself, was that he recognizes this is his last opportunity and he's going to make the most of it. And I mean, he really spoke about the opportunity to you know, just embrace the grind, embrace the day-to-day, the mentorship, every aspect of the game, things that I think that he's matured into. This was a much more calm version of Wade, I think a much more mature version. And he just seemed like he was really appreciative of being given the opportunity to play one more year with his team. And you know, the fact that it worked out so well as it did last year, he made this choice. It was, as he mentioned in his video, he was looking at other options. He was looking at retirement. Obviously, he was looking at the chance to spend more time with his family. And he said, you know what, for one more year, I want to be able to do this with my friends and brothers. And that's why he is re-signed with his team. And he's fully engaged, too, though. So the other aspect of that is that he recognizes that this is the Heat, that they're going to be working hard, and that despite the fact that there may not be a glut of talent on this team, he wants to help push for a successful year, make the playoffs, and try to go as deep as possible. So there's definitely that balance there. When it came to everybody else, nothing but glowing, you know, talk about Dwayne Wade and his return. Spoelstra himself was kind of giddy almost in discussing Dwayne, saying he had a chance to talk with him just days before the announcement and kind of convince him to re-sign with the team. So I don't know that there's necessarily been a wink-wink acknowledgement regarding playing time or anything like that, but certainly conversations were had prior to Dwayne's decision. And, you know, nothing concrete regarding starting minutes or anything like that, although Dwayne did tell me that, you know, he was, you know, if given the chance to play more minutes, even he might be able to contend for an all-star position, you know, knowing that LeBron's out in the West now, obviously. But, you know, I think everybody else spoke really, really highly of Dwayne and his return. There was no bad tension or feelings of any kind. They know that this is about competing as a group, and it's not about fighting for minutes or anything like that. With all the depth and versatility on this team, you'd think that there might be some tension there as far as, you know, oh, you're cutting into my playing time, things of that sort. But to a man, everybody I spoke to seemed really, really well aware of the situation, and it didn't really bother them because they knew that it was for something bigger than just individual glory or anything like that. So, and when it comes to Dwayne, again, having that mentorship, that presence around, everybody spoke so highly of him, and they're all glad to have him back on the roster. Even guys that didn't necessarily play with him before he went off to Chicago, you know, guys like James Johnson and Wayne Ellington, they got a taste for it last year, and they're looking forward to a repeat of that. And I think they're just really, really glad to have him back. It was a really nice kind of welcoming moment for him. And, you know, one of the things that he talked about in his speech to the media was, you know, he referred to Shaquille O'Neal recently saying that one of the things that he was most resentful of, you know, of his Hall of Fame career was that he never got a chance to have a farewell tour. And while Dwayne has never said that this is a specifically a farewell tour, it's a chance to finish this chapter of his life on his own terms, not on somebody else's. And that's something that a lot of people acknowledge, that, you know, when you're an older athlete, you never get to define how you leave the highest stage. You know, you either are too old to compete, or you're not wanted by a certain team, or you might be traded, or you might go somewhere else. Who knows? Right. A lot of different possibilities there.
Spo talked about the fact that, you know, oftentimes an old professional athlete is the last one to know that he or she is done, right, in their league. And look, there seemed to be a casual confidence to Dwayne Wade. And yeah, he's understanding that this is his last year, and there's a certain excitement and you know, in the ability of being able to say goodbye to the game, and he talked a lot about that. But you're right. I mean, he was able to balance that really well with, also, we've got Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow and Bam and these young guys who can get better, and I want to be able to mentor them. And he talked a lot about that, and that goes along with that confidence. I mean, 16 years in the NBA, he knows how to get it done. He doesn't have to worry about his legacy. He knows that he's not winning another championship, right? He understands that. There's nothing that he's going to pad onto his resume. He's probably he kind of joked, like you said, he kind of joked about making the All-Star game. He has no expectations of making the All-Star game. He gets it. His resume is done. Like, this is just going to be a couple. He's going to score a few more points, get a few more rebounds, and put a few more blocks on his, you know, shortest shot blocker of all time record or whatever it is. And that's going to be what. But most of this year is going to be. And he hates to. He keeps saying that he hates to use this word, and I believe him. The farewell tour. But there is that cool, calm, collected confidence that not only is that nice to see from Dwayne Wade, because that wasn't necessarily the Dwayne Wade we had last seen, right? Like, even last year, he had that transition from going to Cleveland to Miami, going to the playoffs, highly competitive, blah, blah, blah. Before that, you know, the contract disputes coming out of the LeBron James era, it wasn't this cool, calm, collected version of Dwayne Wade. So it's great to see him like this, but also, you know, him understanding, you know, where he is, where the rest of this team is, and knowing how to balance that. Spo talked about his intuitive leadership and how far that's come along in his career, and I think that was abundantly clear in not only his own press conference, but in the entire way he's sort of handled this and the way that his teammates are reacting to him.
Yeah, I absolutely have to agree with you there. It's just, you know, he really understands. And I think maybe that's a result of being older. And that's something that he acknowledged, that he's not the player that he once was. And actually, I can't remember the exact quote now, but thinking about his career, he said something to that effect, you know, remembering the player that I once was, not the player that I am. And so he's aware of his own physical and you know, biological limitations, as well as he should be. And that doesn't mean that he's not willing to do the work. And that's, you know, that balance, I think, is a really great theme for his, you know, his approach to the season, is that, yeah, he understands he's going to do the best that he can. And he knows that he's not going to be tasked with doing everything the way he once was, nor is he capable of doing so. But it's about appreciating these moments. And so that's something that I'm looking forward to, because I never, you know, I've had my doubts about Dwayne Wade, the mentor, at least earlier in his career. Specifically, I think he wasn't the type during the 2008 through 2010 seasons. I don't think he was the type to really guide Michael Beasley along. He's more of the watch how I perform, and you try to do the best that you can to live up to that. And you know, that's just how some players are wired. I think this is a different version. And we saw evidence of that last year when he was, you know, watching film with Tyler Johnson and you know, taking Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow aside and helping them with defensive schemes and things of that sort. And I think this is going to be an extension of that. and really just appreciating. So I've got to say, though, as far as not liking the farewell tour term, maybe he doesn't like it, but this is exactly that. I mean, there's no denying that.
Yeah, it's already delivered. This is the farewell tour. I got one more quick Dwayne Wade thought, and then I want to talk a little bit about a lot of what Eric Spoelstra had to say, which I think, you know, was maybe the more interesting of all of the interviews, was just sort of Spo's take on this roster. But first, let me tell you about what's going on the NFL side of the network. Locked On NFL is becoming a favorite daily NFL podcast. On Mondays, we have the local experts on the biggest stories of the week. On Tuesdays, former NFL quarterback, Miami Dolphins quarterback, Sage Rosenfels, joins host Matt Williamson, who will have some of the best voices in football on throughout the week before making his picks on Fridays. So if you're looking for a daily NFL podcast, subscribe to Locked On NFL on iTunes, Google Podcasts, whatever you use to listen to podcasts, it's there. Okay, so really quick before I go move on to Spo, one thing Dwayne Wade said in that clip that we played at the top was that at the beginning of the summer, right after last season, he was kind of 90-10, foot out the door, right?
Yeah.
And I just wanted to bring that up because you and I have been talking about our own feelings, about Dwayne Wade's feelings, about retiring all summer long. And you and I, at the end of the season, both said, oh, he's retiring. He's definitely retiring. And then throughout the summer, I was a little bit sooner, but I came off of that opinion. I was like, you know what? Kind of feels like he's coming back. Eventually, you know, you were like, yeah, does feel like he's coming back. And then we went from just you and I being 90-10, Dwayne Wade's definitely retiring, to almost 90-10, like, he's definitely coming back for one more year. And that, I just want to give a pat on the back to us, because we definitely have our finger on the pulse of basically Dwayne Wade's pulse here. We knew, as he was 90-10 out the door, we were like, yep, he's 90-10 out the door. And he kind of just, he changed his mind throughout the summer for whatever reason, talking with Udonis Haslam, getting back in the weight room, wanting this one last chance to say goodbye like he talked about. All these things came together, and we started to get that feeling like it kind of looks like Dwayne Wade's coming back, and he's coming back. So I just wanted to give us shouts for that. We were right on.
Yeah, I mean, look, last year was a nice way of wrapping things up, but this is, again, another extension of that. And I think he deserves it. He's accomplished a lot in his NBA career, and just a chance to – one of the things that we've heard as a common theme for guys that have retired is, for the most part, how they choose to define their lives without the game. Look, even from San Antonio's media day yesterday, Manu Ginobili's there. He just retired, you know, a few weeks ago, but it's kind of hard to give it up. Even Tim Duncan, who retired years ago, still attends practices. And you can say, oh, that's just San Antonio culture, et cetera. But I don't think that's going to change. I think you could see a guy like Udonis being a part of of Miami practices for years to come, whether however long he chooses to. And that's something that Spoelstra wanted to emphasize.
Throwing,
it's up
throwing
to UD,
water bottles at rookies he's never played with.
And still climbing backboards. Yeah, I mean,
still climbing backboards. That was great. Yeah, I could see, and Dwayne Wade mentioned being like a local hoop superstar. I love that idea of him just like going around Miami, just playing pickup. Like, we're going to have Instagrams of that. Like, that's going to happen. And I'm just,
I can't believe that, though. I mean, come on. It's Dwayne Wade. I think he's fully aware of that. He just,
but
you know, he's trying to tone down
the Wade County stuff. He loves that so much. Like, the fact that he has an Instagram account that he can, over, you know, just some random day in June or something, go out, hoop in some random court in Miami or something, and knowing that's going to make the rounds on Instagram when he's no longer in the spotlight, when he's retired. I guarantee you right now that will be a thing that happens in our life.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping I'll be on the court the day it happens, too, to be honest with you.
Maybe. All right, if you'll get the video first. Let's move on to Eric Spoelstra, because I can listen to Eric Spoelstra talk forever. He says way more things that Pat Riley says, even though he's got a little bit of that Riley stuff. Like, he can go a minute without really saying anything, sort of like what we do here on this podcast. But he did mention that no one has the blueprint for success except for the Warriors, and that is kind of a league-wide understanding, right? And that blueprint is basically having Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. So it's not that complicated, but he did talk about...
Are you specifically targeting the questions that I asked him? Because he mentioned that in his response to me.
Was that your question?
Was it pure coincidence? I asked him about the versatility of the roster, and he said that, you know, obviously, and Golden State has the key to success right now, and nobody else is going to match that. So,
well, let's play that audio right here, because I got that quote.
The one thing I do know, that's the way this league is going. You better have some versatility. You better have some very good perimeter play. You better have guys that can do multiple things, be able to defend multiple players. That's why we're excited about this group.
Okay, so that seemed to be a theme for the Heat, David, that versatility that you were talking about, that Spo just talked about. He sees this Heat roster as versatile, and he kind of mentioned that, you know, maybe a lot of other people don't see it as versatile as I see it, but I see it as versatile. I don't really care what other people think of this roster. So there is, we've talked a lot about the approach of the Heat just in kind of macro terms, but in regards to how the league is trending, he talked about needing to have strong perimeter play, needing to be able to guard positions 1 through 5. He feels like this roster has got it. Now let's just ignore, can they beat the Warriors? No. But he thinks that this roster is made for the modern NBA, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's not necessarily about knocking off the Warriors. And I think that's a good point that you brought up. And it doesn't really matter, because I think there are 29 other teams that have that same question of whether or not they're capable. I mean, you could argue that last year's Rockets team was as capable as any. And look, let's overlook the aberration of 2016 in Cleveland. As nice as that team was, and with, you know, led by a superstar in LeBron James, perhaps the greatest player of all time, they're not going to win that championship without Draymond Green's absence, without Steph Curry's injury, et cetera.
Or, and if I know Kevin Durant is on the Warriors that year.
Yeah, good point. This is a very, very good team. And as far as Miami is concerned, they're not looking to necessarily upset the Warriors, but they're looking to be competitive, and they can do that by having the depth and the versatility that they do on this roster. So regardless of how it plays out with the Jimmy Butler situation, as it's currently constructed, they feel very positive. And another thing that I got consistently from everybody I spoke to was they really believe that not having any kind of significant turnover over the summer is a real positive for them. The term continuity was used by everyone, from Spoelstra to Dwayne to Wayne Ellington to Tyler. Everybody spoke about continuity and looking forward, how they feel. You know, Spoelstra talked about it at length. And again, you're absolutely right that he was a really great quote. He just spoke that, look, there's no need to kind of go through the minutiae of having to learn sets or explain everything. Like, even guys that, you know, you and I had talked about this when they were signed, Jarnell Stokes, Briante Weber, whether they transition or make any kind of impact at the NBA level is unlikely. But as far as training camp, quote unquote, bodies are concerned, they bring that same consistency, that same understanding. So it's not, you don't have to take the time to explain things, because everybody already gets it. They're already familiar with it.
They're leaning all the way into that.
Yeah, yeah. And that's their bread and butter. That's one of the strengths. And they really see it as that. Well, others might look as stagnancy, they're looking as a positive development, one where they can kind of build on that and say, look, we have some talent. We've got continuity. We've got endurance, because you know they're going to be in great shape at the start of the season. And that's, you know, one of the things that I thought was going to be in play last year at the start of the season. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way, with Hassan getting hurt and then Deion kind of being still with a lingering injury. So it didn't work out that way after the 30-11 end to the previous season. But I think we'll see it now. Everybody's healthy for the most part. Deion's still going to miss the start of training camp. So is James Johnson. He was at practice today, but he's not in full, you know, fully engaged as far as in physical and everything that they were doing on the floor. He's optimistic that he's going to be able to play from day one. And as Spoelstra hinted, and as James himself said, you know, he wants to be out there ASAP, but he's got to take the time to kind of let it rest and everything else like that. He feels good. I think he said he was about 90% as far as his overall health is concerned. So that's optimistic. That's good.
That'll be important to have. Not so much Deion Waiters, you know, unfortunately, but just only because Miami has so much depth at the guard position and guys that can kind of do the Deion Waiters thing. But James Johnson, there's nobody – I mean, yeah, you could start Winslow at the four and maybe start that and sort of manage your rotations that way. But James
and Spoelstra did talk about Winslow being all over the floor, and that's definitely going to be
all of it.
Something we'll see. All of it was the term. He wants to play him at center. He wants to play him at point guard, and that's the strength of Winslow. I mean, we've talked about that before, so we're really
encouraged.
It'd
be nice if we could just decide on one thing that he does like 80% of the time. That's my only gripe, but – look, I think if you played a drinking game where you took a shot every time somebody on the Heat in the Heat organization used the word continuity or development, you would have been blacked out within the first 30 minutes of media day, right? I mean, that was sort of the theme there. I mean, I love the way you put that. What a lot of people view as stagnancy, they view as building, right? And
yes,
so there's something to that. And there's also, you know, there's this. I want to go back to the Warriors here, because I was in Oakland for that media day, And there is a sense within that Warriors organization, like, this could be the last year that we're all together here. Like, we don't know how long this is going to stay. We don't know how long, like, five finals, you know, four straight finals hardly ever happens. Five straight finals has only happened one other time. And so, like, we're well aware of what we have here, but it could all just, this could be the last time. This could be our last dance. That's Dwayne Wade's Thunder. But in that, you know, the rest of the league is just sort of waiting for that to happen, whether it's this year, next year, 2 years from now, whenever. The rest of the league is just sort of waiting for that. So what are you supposed to do? Like, maybe you don't, like, blow up your team and just trade for a bunch of B-plus superstars or B-plus all-stars or whatever, but if you're a coach like Eric Spoelstra, you look at that and you say, all right, maybe I can't beat the Warriors because I don't have four of the greatest players of all time, but I can start building the habits, start coaching the habits, and making sure that this is a modern NBA team that is going wherever the NBA is going. And if you're Spoelstra, whatever 15 players you have, you've got to kind of approach it that way. So it's as much as the development is for him as it is for the rest of the league. Still a whole lot more to talk about, but really quick, including some stuff on Jimmy Butler, but really quick, Locked On NBA is here for you every day, not just Tuesdays with us, but every Monday you get the local experts on the biggest stories. And then stay with Locked On NBA all week long with daily 30-minute episodes on everything going on in the league from hosts from all around the Locked On Podcast Network. Follow for free on your favorite podcast app or tell your smart speaker to play the podcast Locked On NBA. So just really quick, before we move on to some of the Jimmy Butler stuff here, because that did cast a shadow over everything. I have, maybe it's just me completely fanboying out and just trying to find some reason to be optimistic, but I am all about everything the Heat are doing right now. Jimmy Butler trade or not, whatever. I love Eric Spoelstra's approach to this, that, hey, screw whatever else is happening in the rest of the league, I can't control that. What I can control is this 15-man roster, and I can control what I'm learning as a coach and how this league is trending. And to me, that speaks to what the strategy is going to be with Justice Winslow, quote-unquote, all of it, what it's going to be about Josh Richardson, how he wants him to develop offensively. He talked a lot about what Richardson can do on the defensive end and his versatility. And then again, a guy like Bam Adebayo, who just seems like if you were going to build a prototype center for today's game, at least for the defensive end, it would be Bam Adebayo. I'm all in on everything that he's selling.
You know, the thing is, I think it speaks a lot to the kind of person Eric is as a coach, that I think if he's given the choice between coaching a super talented team like the Big Three era or a kind of group that has to work a little bit harder, I think he'd choose the latter because I think it's more about actually coaching and trying to get the most out of those type players. I kind of equate it to teachers. You know, I know a lot of teachers. My wife was a teacher. And one of the things that she always told me is that she would appreciate and this is something that I've heard a lot of, they would always appreciate the students that work the hardest, even if the best they could possibly get was a C or a B. It's not always about getting the A. And I think that's, you know, you can equate that same analogy to talent in the NBA, where, you know, obviously with a very high talent roster, your ceiling is arguably going to be higher, but you don't have to do as much coaching either. It's more about managing egos and making sure everybody gets along, et cetera. With this kind of team, it's more about trying to draw as much blood from those respective stones as possible. And I think this is where Spoelstra really is happiest, is trying to get this group to really take another level up, to good to great. And that was something that he mentioned during the conference as well, is that he really wants to get these guys, the young trio, assuming that they'll be there when the start of the season happens, that he wants to get them to take that next level in their development. And I think that's something that he's really looking forward to. So that is absolutely a really encouraging aspect, I think, for a lot of fans that might be somewhat frustrated because it wasn't the kind of glamorous summer that we've seen in 2010 or in other times. You know, hey, and it all could change. That's the whole thing. We're talking about this now.
It's a good transition. That's a good place to transition to our next topic here, because it seemed like among all the stories with this team that the uncertainty of the Jimmy Butler trade talks in Minnesota does – It casted a strange cloud over media day. What was the vibe like on Monday?
It wasn't really palpable. I'll be 100% honest with you. I think reporters are reporters, and we're going to rumor and talk about and kind of try and dig in there and find out what's going on. As we were waiting for Eric to approach the podium, we were told by Tim Donovan, head of Heat PR, they would not address any questions about the trade. And they asked us to respect it. So, I mean, obviously somebody could have broken that protocol, but you're going to endanger your relationship with the team, something you're not likely to do. So nobody brought it up to Eric. Nobody brought it up to anybody. I think some players kind of hinted at it. I have to go back and listen to some of the audio. They kind of were aware that their summer might have been difficult, and that they were hearing some of that kind of talk, but nobody really asked them about it specifically. And then as far as the rest of the media is concerned and the rest of the media day, it was mostly positive. And then halfway through, it was this strange occurrence where a lot of players we got a chance to speak to early in the morning, and then there was a second wave of players that were supposed to come up, and they never did, or they didn't until really late in the day. And it just so happened that these players, Dion Waiters was going to sit out anyway because he wasn't going to be involved in any kind of team-related activity. So that was, we were informed of that early on. But guys like Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow, Hassan Whiteside, Kelly Olynyk, you know, guys that we had heard specifically might be included in these trade talks, weren't upstairs and available to media. So, of course, we're all starting to think, oh, this is an indicator that a trade's coming. It can't just be a coincidence. Eventually, those players did come up, though, so it kind of assuaged all those fears. But at the same time, you kind of wonder whether or not they were maybe – you know, maybe they were coached up, or it could just be a matter of a rotation. You know, some players had to go through different stops along the day. They have to take different pictures. So you've got a group that's upstairs handling interviews. Then they go downstairs to take pictures and vice versa. So it's kind of this rotation of guys there.
It is sort of weird that that rotation happens, right? Like media day is planned out, and then
there are stations all over the place.
Yeah stations everywhere. Photographers grab players for longer than they're supposed to, and all these, and then, you know, players just kind of go off their own way and just sort of get disorganized, and this happens. But it is a little weird that all the guys who were rumored to be in the Jimmy Butler trade conversations were all held out towards the end, and there was like this weird break in the middle, like they weren't available until later. Like, I'm not saying there's a conspiracy, but yeah, no, right? That's too much of a coincidence.
I tend to agree with you. That may not have been. They might have purposely said, all right, the guys that are going to be on the second phase, the second wave, those are guys that are probably or might be likely to get, you know, traded.
Maybe their idea was that a bunch of reporters would leave so that they wouldn't talk to them about the Jimmy Butler stuff? Were they trying to, like...
A lot of reporters did leave. There was definitely less... you know, of a presence there in the second, during the second wave there. But UD was among that second wave too, so you can't read too much into it because he's not getting traded anywhere, obviously. But, you know, it's just a coincidence. And that's, look, for our listeners that might not be familiar with it, it's very odd. You're trying to get everything. The kind of promotional photos and videos that you see during Christmas and Valentine's Day when Goran Dragic grabs a box of chocolates and says, will you be mine? That kind of stuff, that happened
that
yesterday. Yeah, no, I'm saying that, you know, I'm sure I've seen something like that. Oh. You know, there was a picture of him that made the rounds, I think, of him like in an overstuffed Santa Claus suit. Yeah. There he is. That was him. That was taken yesterday at the arena. And then, you take pictures of holding a basketball or gritting your teeth or looking intensely into the camera.
The basketball thing is my favorite. I was when I was in Oakland yesterday. The new Warriors starting five with Boogie, projected five. With DeMarcus Cousins there, they were all doing like their five man photo lineup thing, and they're all there without the basketball. And then the photographer's like, all right, now let's get some basketballs involved. And they like puts two basketballs in the photo. Like, at what point are these five guys gonna be on the court with two basketballs? Like, you'll never. It just doesn't make any sense. Like, and just like kind of holding it, and like DeMarcus Cousins is like kneeling on the basketball. It just doesn't, like, the basketball is like the thing that they've created their entire life with, basically, is now just used as a photo prop, as like a novelty item. Like, it's the funniest thing to me. All right, anyway,
those are definitely fun, but yeah, I mean, overall it was just a very good experience. And although I think there was that understanding that a trade could have happened at any second, I don't necessarily agree that it cast a shadow. It was there. You can't deny that it was there. You never know what's going to happen. And, you know, even as we're moving forward to, you know, they're all there at practice today. And you know, they're aware that could change. You know, a player's going to get held out of a practice tomorrow or Wednesday, and he's going to get the unfortunate news that he's no longer going to be with the team. So that's the reality of life in the NBA, and something that we have to consider.
Yeah, what else can you do? And again, you know, at the time of us recording this, who knows what's going to be happening in the next, you know, couple days, let alone the next 15 minutes with Jimmy Butler. But as of now, no news on that, just rumors. But that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. As always, you can reach us by email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter by using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And as a reminder, if you want to contribute to that written Miami Heat season preview that we got coming up in the next couple weeks, you can do that by visiting patreon.com/lockedonheat and clicking on the questionnaire link that we have up there. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Thanks for listening. One last thing before you go. If you run a company and you're unhappy with your return from advertising online or in print, try something new and advertise on a podcast here at Locked On Heat. This is a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. More and more people are listening every day. 50% of U.S. households listen to a podcast, and 1 in 5 Americans between ages 18 and 49 listen to at least one a month. That's according to Nielsen. Thanks to the rise in mobile options from iTunes to Spotify and more, to your smart speaker at home, there's more ways than ever to listen to podcasts. Now is the time to get in. Be ahead of your competition and start advertising on a podcast with us. Our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listens, so you get what you pay for, with numbers to back it up. Whereas print, TV, and radio ads are a shot in the dark. You have no idea who is reading, watching, or listening. That's not the case with podcasts. If you want to reach engaged, passionate, and knowledgeable South Floridians, this is the way to do it. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company on the next episode.